It's been spewing gas and some amount of crude, and some of it's getting onto the surrounding tundra.
BP works to contain a leaking production well on the North Slope. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, April 14th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, outdated revenue forecast numbers frustrate lawmakers.
So the numbers that you're looking at here for fiscal year 18 on this particular forecast are what we heard earlier are stale. They have not been updated.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by
First National Bank Alaska. For nearly a century, First National has been Alaska's community bank. Learn how experience and local knowledge make the difference at fnbalaska.com.
BP is working to contain an out-of-control production well at Prudhoe Bay on the North Slope. The well is currently venting natural gas and has released at least some crude oil into the environment. State regulators say they don't yet know how serious the incident is or what volume of oil or gas has been released. BP says nobody was near the well when the incident began and there have been no injuries. Dan Seamount is a commissioner with the Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commission.
It's been spewing gas and some amount of crude, and some of it's getting onto the surrounding tundra. We don't have any volumes yet.
Seamount says it's been years since an incident like this took place on the North Slope. The drill site is about 5 miles from Dead Horse. BP is now working to depressurize the drill site to reduce the amount of gas venting from the well. Regulators say no workers are being allowed near it until that happens because of the fire hazard. Ashley Adamczak is with the State Department of Environmental Conservation.
When a well has lost control, it becomes unpredictable, and we want to make sure that the people that respond to the site do so in a safe way.
Adamczak says once workers are able to approach the well, the company and regulators will be able to get a better sense of what caused the incident and how much oil and gas was released. The company first noticed the oil and gas release at about 7:30 this morning. State and federal regulators are traveling to Prudhoe Bay to establish a unified command. As of late this afternoon, there was no word yet on when the well might be controlled. Alaska's Department of Revenue faced criticism during a Senate Finance Committee meeting today after it put out its spring forecast. It predicts an unprecedented 12% drop in oil production next year. That prediction came from the state's Department of Natural Resources. It took over the task of predicting oil production last year. In the past, the state used an outside consultant. But DNR's Ed King says while the spring revenue sources book may be new, the production forecast numbers are not.
So the numbers that you're looking at here for fiscal year 18 on this particular forecast are what we heard earlier are stale. They have not been updated. So to stay on the record very clear, the department does not anticipate a 12% decline over the next year.
That didn't sit well with lawmakers who use the spring forecast and projections of revenue that will come into the state from oil production to justify their proposals for state's budget. Among other proposals, lawmakers are considering an income tax this session to help fill the state's budget gap. Eagle River Republican Senator Anna McKinnon says her finance committee needs better modeling.
Production will play a huge role. It makes a huge economic difference in the picture that is being painted for Alaskans as we go forward with at least one legislative body in pursuit of taxing individual Alaskans.
King told members of the Senate Finance Committee that Department of Natural Resources staff are trying to do more with less.
And I guess the parting comment that I would make is that, you know, with the reduced budgets and with the reduced resources and the task of producing this forecast without any additional resources is a fairly heavy lift for us to absorb. And we can't necessarily do that every single month while new data comes in. So we are doing the best that we can.
Prices per barrel of oil are projected to increase slightly to $54 per barrel in the 2018 fiscal year. And another bright spot in the revenue forecast is that the state expects to have about $200 million more in general fund revenue this fiscal year than it originally projected. The news about oil revenue comes just 2 days before the legislature was scheduled to end its session. But with much left to do, lawmakers will continue to work in Juneau next week. For more on the plans, I'm joined by Alaska Public Media and KTOO's Andrew Kitchenman. Hi, Andrew.
Hi, Lori.
So the two big tasks for the legislature are agreeing on a state budget for next year and agreeing on a plan to make budgets stable in the future. How does the oil revenue news play into that?
It depends on which side of the partisan divide in the legislature you're talking to. So the Republicans in the Senate majority and House minority, they say that the new revenue is going to weaken the case for introducing a state income tax. They don't want it. But on the House side in the majority, they basically say that this new money, it's not going to close the gap. It's just not enough to close the budget gap. And so they are sticking with their plans for an income tax.
And we should say that the majority in the House is primarily Democrats.
That's true. That's true. So there is definitely a divide there. But there are three members of the House majority who are Republicans and two independents.
Andrew, where do things stand on the budget?
The Senate has to decide whether they're going to accept the House's version of the budget. And that's probably not going to happen. The two chambers are $230 million apart. So what will happen is each chamber chooses, the leader of each chamber chooses three members to meet in the conference committee, and then they'll have to work out the differences over the budget. The Senate wants to spend $230 million less than the House. So that's really where the division is.
And what about a long-term plan to balance the budget?
Just like the difference on the budget for next year, the two chambers haven't reached an agreement. The Senate is primarily focused on drawing money from permanent fund earnings to pay for state government. Their plan also includes setting the permanent fund dividends at $1,000, and it counts on making a lot of budget cuts, $750 million over 3 years. The House added a provision to the Senate, the permanent fund bill that the Senate passed, and that says that the bill will only go into effect if the legislature also passes bills to reintroduce an income tax and raise oil and gas taxes. They also want PFDs to be $1,250.
And what do senators think of the House plan?
Some senators in the majority caucus say that the House should have just sent over a clean bill. That's a bill that only had the changes to the permanent fund, didn't have the income tax. The chairman of the House Finance Committee originally wanted to pass a different bill that combined changes to the permanent fund with an income tax, but they decided not to do that.
Why is that?
They were concerned there would be a lawsuit challenging whether the bill violates the provision of the state constitution that says laws must be confined to a single subject. Members of the House minority say they have a similar concern with the change that the majority made to the permanent fund bill. They think that making the permanent fund changes dependent on the tax bills also violates the rule about having a single subject.
Interesting. Do we know what the courts are likely to say about that?
We actually do have an idea. Doug Gardner, who's the legislature's top lawyer for the nonpartisan Legislative Affairs Agency, he wrote a memo that I obtained. And Gardner writes in the memo that the House majority's law would likely survive legal challenge. He looks at precedents in other states about whether it's legal to make one law depend on passing other laws. And he also looks at whether it violates the rule about having a single subject. Gardner found that courts usually find it's okay to say that one bill depends on other bills passing. But that's true basically as long as each separate bill is on a single subject.
All right, Andrew, do we know when the session is likely going to end?
No, we don't. No. There could be dozens of bills that the legislature works on within the next month. The Senate majority laid out about 17. The House has others. And if the legislature doesn't finish its work by May 17th, which is the day the Constitution says the session must end, then there could be a special session after that.
All right, Andrew. Well, thanks for keeping an eye on all of the things that are going on down there in the Capitol.
Thank you, Lori.
That was Alaska Public Media and KTOO's Andrew Kitchenman reporting from Juneau. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a new state initiative to reduce the number of people in jail before they go to trial.
The biggest growth in our prison population in the state, like most other states in the nation, has been in this pre-trial population.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by BP, celebrating 40 years of production in Prudhoe Bay and support for the Alaska communities where BP employees live and work. Learn more about how BP gives back to local communities at bp.com/Alaska.
A natural gas leak in Cook Inlet has finally been repaired more than 3 months after it began. The oil and gas company Hillcorp says a dive team managed to install a clamp on its pipeline late last night after a week of work and 12 dives. The leak in a line near Nikiski was discovered in early February, though federal regulators say it probably began in December. Divers couldn't get down to repair the line for weeks after the discovery because of winter sea ice conditions in the inlet. In a press release today, Hillcorp says the culprit was a small hole in the bottom of the pipeline where it was resting on a boulder on the sea floor. The company has shut down two other pipelines in Cook Inlet in recent weeks after suspected oil and gas leaks. State regulators say an oil sheen near Hillcorp's Anna drilling platform did not come from a pipeline, but instead likely came from the platform itself. Hillcorp is still investigating whether there may be a leak in a natural gas line from its steelhead platform. The string of incidents has drawn scrutiny from both regulators and environmentalists. The state and federal regulators plan to conduct a review of oil and gas infrastructure in Cook Inlet, much of which dates back to the 1960s. For most people, the last day on the job before retiring is a celebration. But Michael Cox capped off his career at the Environmental Protection Agency with a scathing letter to agency head Scott Pruitt. Since 1987, Cox has worked for the EPA. Most recently, he served as climate advisor for Region 10, which covers Alaska, Washington, Oregon, and Idaho. He was planning on retiring, but not like this. He says he wants the agency to be successful.
You know, when you work for any organization, I don't care if it's a government organization or business, if you put over 25 years of your life, you want to see that organization succeed. So that's really what I want to see EPA succeed. And to do that, the administrator has to succeed. And so I hope he can.
What concerns Cox is the overwhelming lack of confidence in EPA leadership. He has worked under six administrations and says morale is at an all-time low. In the letter, Cox suggests four ideas that could help Pruitt to be a better leader, including using science as a guiding principle, listening and learning from EPA career staff, and visiting Alaska.
As I said, come and visit. Come and go to Alaska, and people will show you that climate change is, as you said, it's happening. It's right here. It's not something made up.
The Trump administration's proposed budget would slash 31% of the EPA's funding. Those programs could be taken up by local, state, or tribal entities. In theory, Cox thinks that's a good idea.
In Alaska, where the budget deficit is so enormous that to take on additional programs right now and make up the slack, for example, of what the EPA might not be providing, federal government they're providing, it's going to be a real challenge.
One program President Trump has put on the chopping block helps build wastewater and drinking water infrastructure in rural Alaska. Senator Lisa Murkowski wants to keep it. She chairs the subcommittee that writes the EPA's spending bill, and Congress has the final say on the budget. Cuts would be accelerated across the University of Alaska system if a state Senate proposed budget is finalized by the legislature. The UA Board of Regents met yesterday to discuss contingency measures in light of Senate-passed funding for UA that's $22 million less than the amount supported by the House and Governor. UA President Jim Johnson did not cite specifics, but previewed a range of areas targeted for cuts if the lower number holds.
Continued work on program reductions, pressure on research support, community campuses would be impacted, no question about it. Facility maintenance, this has been an important goal for the board and for the university. That, I think, would have to be scrutinized. And I think we'd end up, again, with fewer faculty, fewer staff to help our students.
Johnson noted that UA has already weathered a 14% reduction in state support over the last 3 years. That's resulted in the loss of more than 900 jobs and elimination or suspension of 50 academic programs.
And so serious impacts are being felt now, and with the reduction of this level, those impacts will become more and more serious.
President Johnson emphasized the importance of protecting key priorities, including system-wide Title IX initiatives as well as individual campus focuses like health at UAA, research at UAF, and education at UAS. The university's strategic pathways process is aimed at weaning UA down to $312 million in state funding by 2025. Johnson says accelerating the decline will result in a hard landing, which would trigger more abrupt action, including a possible mid-year tuition hike in January 2018. A new state office aims to reduce crime and save money. The pretrial division stipulated by the Criminal Justice Reform Bill passed last year by the Alaska Legislature will assist people who are jailed but have yet to go to trial. In Fairbanks on Wednesday, pretrial director Jerry Fox explained the division's mission, emphasizing that currently in Alaska, more than 60% of people charged with a crime spend nearly 2 months in jail before trial.
By that point, you've lost your job, you've lost your house, you may have lost your relationships, right? Your ID is now somewhere in a storage unit or gone altogether. So we release a person who was probably eligible to release anyway. They were just trying to come up with money, and now they come out in a worse situation. What we find out is that increases your risk to do more bad things.
Fox says division offices in Fairbanks and Anchorage will instead allow eligible nonviolent individuals to get out of jail under the supervision of pretrial officers.
Have an appointment, maybe have a drug or alcohol test. And the reason we do it by appointment is because the last thing we want to do is have people congregating together who are struggling, right? So we keep those individuals, let's keep them separate. Let's keep them in pro-social settings. Let's have positive interactions and make sure that the community has some degree of confidence that they're being monitored.
Alaska Department of Corrections Commissioner Dean Williams says, though new to Alaska, the system has proven effective in other states.
The biggest growth in our prison population in the state, like most other states in the nation, has been in this pretrial population. So if you do this right, which every other state who's had a similar model, you get two major results. One, you get better results in terms of safety and court appearances. And the second thing is you save money because you reduce your hard bed costs.
8 pretrial officers will begin piloting the program in Fairbanks in September. The state's Fox emphasizes it will serve people from many northern communities who are jailed in Fairbanks, noting she plans to reach out to Alaska Native villages.
In order to make this useful in their communities, something that they want in their communities. So that's a conversation I'll be having over the course of the summer.
The state anticipates official operations of the new pretrial facility by year's end. An Anchorage office is on a similar timeline.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Older Persons Action Group publishes Senior Voice, Alaska's only statewide publication for seniors, and is an excellent source of information for families and caregivers. SeniorVoiceAlaska.com. This message sponsored by OPAG.
Ketchikan, Kotzebue,
Dillingham, Sitka,
Chugiak,
Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon,
Wrangell,
Barrow, Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Alaknarechmute.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Dave Waldron. This week on AK, the king of country music, at least as far as the Yukon's concerned. A lot of people up north wear cowboy hats. Some of them even play guitar. But one 84-year-old man is among the few who sing real cowboy songs. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld brings us this profile of Art Johns, one of the hundreds of performers at this month's Alaska Folk Festival held in Juneau.
There's a bridle hanging on the wall, in the saddle in an empty stall.
Art Johns has been playing at the Alaska Folk Festival since 1995, but his musical roots go way back, almost 80 years. He grew up in the rural Yukon towns of Carcross and Tagish, around 60 miles northeast of the Alaska border. John's first inspiration came from phonographs his sister got from a mail-order catalog. The family listened to them on a human-powered machine.
I crank a wheel, a handle, to get the spring loaded and listen to her music. She liked the Carter Family and Jimmy Rogers and stuff like that. That's wore off on me, and I'm the one that started playing.
Johns loved the music and started singing along. Then another relative decided to help him take another step.
I had a cousin that was the same age as my sister, and he taught me three chords on a guitar, and he says, okay, now you can do your singing. Oh, you Mississippi River, with waters so deep and wide, my thoughts of you keep rising, just like an evening tide.
Along with the music, Johns learned subsistence traditions passed down by his parents, who were Tlingit and Tagish. He also learned the family business, becoming a big game outfitter, hunting guide, and game warden. The work involved a lot of horse wrangling.
I like being a cowboy. You're out there and riding your horse and you do what you want. You read the signs of the land, not some person that made this up for you.
Campfire coffee from a tin cup in my hand sure warms the fingers when it's cold.
Then, in the 1990s, a filmmaker decided to make a documentary called Life's Dream. It shows Johns caring for his horses and teaching one of his sons how to track, shoot, and skin a moose. The producer wanted to include the country song, God Must Be a Cowboy. Johns said no, but the filmmaker was insistent.
By golly, I learned it and I sang it, and that's when the public got to know that I played music. So I was getting phone calls from here and there, come to do a coffee house or something. So that's how it all started.
And I think God must be a cowboy at heart. He made wide open spaces from the start. He made grass, trees, and mountains, and a horse to be a friend. Trails to lead old cowboys home again.
Around the same time, Johns connected with Alaska musicians playing a cross-border festival. That led him to the big Juneau event, where he became a regular, performing all but a few years since. John sometimes plays solo, but also likes having a backup band. Most often, he's with his longtime musical partner, Skagway fiddler Nola Lampkin. They had a hard time defining exactly what makes an Art John song.
I never had any lessons in music, nothing. Just if I hear a song and I like it,
He plays what he what comes to his head and what he feels like at the moment. Very campfire-ish.
I finally found the words to say. How long did I intend to stay?
At age 84, Johns is slowing down. He says his fingers don't always do what he wants them to, but he plans to play for as long as he can. For AK, I'm Ed Schoenfeld, reporting in Juneau.
Storm clouds may gather and the heavy rains may come. When the storm is over, we'll share the golden sun.
If you want to hear more from Art Johns, you can find a few of his Alaska Folk Festival sets on our website, alaskapublic.org.
Till I'm just a picture in a frame.
Now it's time for 49 Voices. This week we're going to Washington, D.C. Caitlin Sweeney was there last week to be Alaska's princess in the annual Cherry Blossom Festival.
It's a cultural professional development program where young women from pretty much every state and territories come to D.C. for a week during the Cherry Blossom Festival. The age range is 19 to 24, so some people are still in college, some people are starting out their careers, so it really is learning about all these different opportunities and learning how to promote yourself, especially empowering women, young women, in the workforce. There's a spin of the wheel, and all the states are on that wheel, and so if your state gets landed on or your territory gets landed on, you win a trip to Japan, and you are selected as the queen for the upcoming year. It definitely is a big commitment, but I think I would be so honored to represent the United States. It's just, I think, one of the biggest honors. I've been involved kind of within Senator Murkowski's campaigns, Senator Sullivan's campaigns. I was a Senate page and heard about it through that. I love Alaska. I grew up there, and really it's an honor to be representing them. I grew up kind of in Barrow for a couple years, and we go back every summer, and we have a lot of family up there. But we get up to Barrow, and obviously different whaling festivals. I'm in the hotel school at Cornell studying hospitality and business. I'm not too sure what I want to do yet, but definitely want to be returning to Alaska at some point. I could see myself living in Barrow. I'm actually going up there and working there this summer. I'm running a hospitality camp for Native kids within the village of Barrow and possibly other villages. We're not too sure yet. So there is a hotel in Barrow, and so we're just trying to educate people about all the different jobs that are available within hospitality, not only working at a hotel, but there's the customer service orient. There's also like restaurants and food, and there's just a lot of different things that I love and I'm interested in and hope I can inspire other like kids to be interested in that as well and maybe think of it as a career path.
Caitlin Sweeney lives in Anchorage. 49 Voices is AK's attempt to put every Alaskan on the radio. Thanks for listening to AK this week. We had help from Ed Schoenfeld, Liz Ruskin, and Wesley Early. Tune in next week for more unique stories from around the state. I'm Dave Waldron.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. Tonight's stories can be found at our website, alaskapublic.org. You can also follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Rachel Waldholtz in Anchorage, Rasha McChesney and Andrew Kitchenman in Juneau, Zoe Sobel in Unalaska, and Dan Bross in Fairbanks. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Wesley Early is our web editor. And I'm Lori Townsend. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
First National Bank Alaska. For nearly a century, First National has been Alaska's community bank. Learn how experience and local knowledge make the difference at fnbalaska.com.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.